Hello, everyone. We originally recorded this episode with Professor Ziva Hassenfeld on December 7th, 2022, as part of our Learning About Learning webinar series. We're delighted to share it with you now as the next episode of our podcast. In this episode, Ziva and I spoke about her research on the teaching and learning of Tanakh. We were talking about a particular article that she had just written that focuses on the teaching of biblical Hebrew. And when I asked her why that was important, Ziva shared her concern that in many cases, students end up limping along. That was the term she used, limping along for years, 8 or even 12 years in day school, never really developing the ability to access the text in the original. Ziva locates herself in the field of literacy, and her research draws on that field. When I asked her about this, she explained that the study of Tanakh is a kind of literacy practice, or actually it's more like a whole set of literacy practices, that goes far beyond decoding or sounding out words. Literacy is about taking a text and turning it into something meaningful, sometimes in our own heads, but often something that we articulate orally or in writing. That's the work that she wants students to be engaged with, as soon as possible and as consistently as possible. And when I asked her why it matters, she pointed to the connection between literacy and community. One of the things we do as a community is that we make sense of texts in certain ways. So when we give children the opportunity to engage in that practice, even if they're not particularly good at it at first, we're welcoming them into a particular community. We're connecting them to others in that community, and we're helping them to locate themselves within that community. Thanks for being here, and I hope you enjoy listening to my conversation with Ziva as much as I enjoyed talking with her. Hello, and welcome to the Jack Joseph and Morton Mandel Center for Studies in Jewish Education at Brandeis University. My name is John Levison. I'm the director of the Mandel Center, and I'm delighted to bring you another installment in our podcast, Learning About Learning. At the Mandel Center, we are committed to advancing the field of Jewish educational scholarship, especially scholarship on teaching and learning, in order to make a deep and lasting difference on the lives of learners and the vibrancy of the Jewish community. That's our mission. We know that there's great scholarship being done in the field of Jewish education, but it's not always accessible. And even when it is, it's not always obvious why people in the field of Jewish education should care about it. That's what this podcast is about: making really interesting scholarship on Jewish education accessible and talking with scholars about why it matters. Thanks for being here, and I hope you enjoy learning about learning as much as I do. Let's get started. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Jack Joseph and Morton Mandel Center for Studies in Jewish Education at Brandeis University. Our guest today is my colleague here at the Mandel Center at Brandeis, Ziva Hassenfeld. She's coming to us just two doors down from my office. Ziva holds a PhD from Stanford. She completed postdocs here at Brandeis and also at Tufts. And now she serves as the Jack Joseph and Morton Mandel Professor of Jewish Education, Assistant Professor of Jewish Education. She has published widely on the teaching and learning of Tanakh. And today we're going to talk about a new article that's just about to come out in the coming weeks in the Journal of Jewish Education that is called A Pedagogical Approach to Teaching Biblical Hebrew in American Day Schools. Ziva, welcome. It's good to see you.
It's so good to be here with you, John.
Great. As I just mentioned, we want to talk about your forthcoming article about teaching biblical Hebrew. And as I always like to do, I want to start with the backstory for this project. How did you decide? Well, let's start at the general level. How did you decide that you wanted to study the teaching and learning of Tanakh in general? And then in particular, the teaching learning of biblical Hebrew. Tell us something about that, and maybe also tell us something about your methodology. How do you actually undertake this kind of work?
Absolutely. So I don't know how far back you want me to go, to the womb or my own childhood, but I'll take it from the most obvious starting point, which is that I was a Tanakh teacher at Gann Academy. I absolutely adore the literacy practice of reading Tanakh, of reading Jewish texts, and I think it is special. I think it is unique. I think it has something to offer the larger literacy world. And so I love doing it as an insider. I love doing it as a scholar. I love doing it as a teacher. I love doing it as a parent. So the love is real. That's how I got into this. And the scholarship grew out of the love. I just had some questions that I wasn't able to answer in the classroom. And so the way to get answers was to train myself as a qualitative researcher and to learn how you actually conduct research and answer questions. So that is what happened between leaving the classroom at Gann Academy and arriving here as your colleague.
And tell us a little bit more what that looks like. Well, you talked about doing qualitative research. So what kinds of data do you typically gather and what do you do with those data?
Absolutely. So I think I'm unique in the sense that my favorite form of research is teacher research. So I'm not afraid to go back into the classroom. And I feel that there are times where the questions that my research leads me to. So I might do one project where I'm doing think alouds with teachers and classroom observation and classroom ethnography. And I might do another project where I'm doing task-based interviews with students. But often where that leads me is, wow, I need to try this. I have some thoughts and the only way to answer them is to try it. And so my favorite method is actually to go back into the classroom and teach. And the way that I do that is, of course, under IRB supervision, I will create a relationship with a school and they will allow me to come in and teach. And I get student permission, parent permission, and I record the classes. An important part of my methodology is to not only focus on transcript. In other words, it's not only about discourse analysis of what is said in the classroom, but I'm really building towards a more full embodied analysis of how are students positioning themselves in the classroom physically? How's the teacher, which sometimes is myself, sometimes another teacher, physically positioning them? What are the ways that we communicate agency, authority, power through body language, as well as obviously spoken language?
So a lot of qualitative researchers will conduct a bunch of interviews, and you often will do that.
Yeah, interviews are my least favorite because I think they're really inaccurate when we report about ourselves. You know, you can talk and talk and talk about yourself, but actually, I think the things I know best about you are from times we've spent actually engaging in activities together. And so I'll do interviews, but I take them with a grain of salt. So what I really like to do is actually see people doing a task, see people doing a learning task, see people doing a reading task, see people doing a literacy practice. And if seeing them, if I'm making too many interpretations from just watching them do it, I might show it to them and do a stimulated recall interview where I say, hey, this was super interesting when you were translating this word with your students. Can you remember what you were thinking or what were the dilemmas of practice that were coming up as you were in that teaching moment?
A lot of the data will be video recordings of classrooms, of interactions, sometimes of your own classroom, sometimes of other people's classrooms, kind of teaching moments or moments of children interpreting text, those kinds of data, which you then will go back to over and over and over again in order to really understand what's going on, to figure out the patterns.
Yes, microanalysis is essential to my work. In other words, we can unpack so many different things within a 1 minute recording of a classroom, a 1 minute recording of a conversation, 1 minute recording of a child reading a text. There's just so many angles. And what I've allowed myself to do in my analysis is to not commit to one angle, but following some of my role models in literacy, Laura Hansfield and Mary Jueswick, like, it's okay. This is a complicated thing because learning is complicated and humans are complicated and we have multiple identities and we have multiple resources that we're pulling from. And so as I'm understanding what's happening here, I'm going to allow myself to say, hey, I want to investigate this from the position of social power. I want to investigate this from the position of language and literacy. And I want to investigate this from the position of who this child is in the world and where they come from.
So you've already mentioned literacy a number of times. You've used the term literacy practice. And I want to circle back to that because I think for a lot of people who love Tanakh, love teaching Tanakh, love learning Tanakh, that's not necessarily the framework that they will typically think about. So I want to learn more about that, hear more about that from you. But before we get to that, let's think for a minute about this particular article. As I said, it's called Pedagogical Approach to Teaching Biblical Hebrew in American Day Schools. And help us understand at the most abstract level, at the 30,000 foot level, what do you want people to know about the teaching of biblical Hebrew from this article?
Great. So let me explain why I wrote this article and what it's trying to do. I would have what to stand on if I want to say right now to you that I am just absolutely committed that all Jewish texts need to be studied in their language that they were composed in. And it's our responsibility as Jewish educators in the Jewish world to ensure that the next generation can do that work. I could quote to you Bialik, that reading and translation is like kissing a bride with a veil on. I could quote to you Ruth Weiss, who says everyone knows that a real Jew, an authentic Jew, can read from the Torah scroll in the original Hebrew. I could quote you all that, but that's actually not my motivation. That's not where I'm coming from. The reason why I've found myself doing biblical Hebrew work, which is really new for me, in the sense that I don't study language acquisition. I don't study heritage language. I don't study second language acquisition. That's not my training. I'm in literacy. But what I do know is this. Any literacy practice, I know we haven't talked about that yet, but it's not really pedagogically ideal to limp through any literacy practice for 12 years, 9 years, right? So either we need to be studying these texts and allowing our children and our students to access these texts in the biblical Hebrew, or we need to not. And so the motivation for this work was just, I'm seeing a lot of limping through. I'm seeing that schools will say that they are committed to standard number one in the standard benchmarks project, which is accessing the text in the original language. But what that means is throwing in a clause here, throwing in a clause there. Now, my colleague at YU, Scott Goldberg, he has a fabulous piece that was from Cashew that talks about, right, like we have strategies for getting students to a place that they can really decode and that they can read with fluency and comprehend. And so if we want to do it, we have to do it. So that was sort of the motivation for this. If we don't want to do it, you know, I don't have a horse in the race. Like, I'm interested in meaning making. We can't just throw, you know, actually, did you know that for 3 years we were saying, you know, Avraham Holech, and now we're going to say Vayelech, and just do something with that child, right? So that was where I sort of came in and said, like, let's not limp through this. Let's do it.
So that's a really powerful metaphor of limping through. And I hear what you're saying that, you know, if there's an affirmative choice to teach texts in translation, that's a choice. But if we're actually going to access a text in the original language, let's be much more reflective about it and really scaffold structures to help students understand those texts and to become empowered readers of the original text, rather than feeling like, you know, it's some kind of maze that they sometimes get a little bit of a window into, but basically it's they never feel like they really have agency in that domain. So that's really powerful. And the metaphor of limping, I think, is one that I'll hold on to for a long time. But let's get to this question about literacy, because as I said, there are many wonderful people who are engaged in the study of Tanakh and the teaching of Tanakh, but they wouldn't necessarily think about their own work as a literacy practice. And they may wonder why it is that that's the kind of theoretical framework and the theoretical literature that you bring to bear on this research, on the teaching and learning of Tanakh. So tell us more about that.
Absolutely. And that's sort of the nature of a literacy practice. In other words, it's usually not, right, our most fluent literacy practices, that is the things that we do with texts, were usually not taught to us through direct instruction. We're usually inducted into them in a situated practice, right? So that if you're used to flipping through the comics while your parents read the newspaper on Shabbat morning or Sunday morning, right, I'm not sure that you would have the meta language to say, I have a literacy practice that is flipping through and there's a material aspect to it and there's a social aspect to it. And I always smell the coffee that I associate with Calvin and Hobbes, da, 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 right? So that's fine, of course, right? Like that's what we do here in the Ivy Tower. We use jargon, but hopefully the jargon is helpful in the sense that like, okay, you're here with me and I'm inviting you to say, this is a literacy practice, right? The way, and of course, there are multiple literacy practices in any Jewish educational context and any Jewish text. And that's part of what in my work I try to sort out, right? How do we deal with that? How do we talk about that? How do we teach that? But on some basic level, you know, Rabbi Shai Held begins his book by saying the gift that we gave, that the Jewish people gave the world, is the gift of close reading. And I love that. And he cites Rabbi Lauer, but I love that he starts his, you know, Parsha Shavua book with that, because even though the technical term close reading has come to mean something very different in my field in literacy, he's saying it to a Jewish audience. And as a Jewish audience, most of us know what he's talking about. He's talking about, you know, Fochba Vavfochba de Chuleba. He's talking about Shivim Panin La Torah. He's talking about this idea that we like to take a term, take a word, and play with it and unpack it and offer multiple meanings. And there's all of these ways that we do this in Jewish literacy practices. Let me say practices. And so that's special. That's really special in my mind. And that has something to offer the larger world. So that's what I'm talking about when I talk about a literacy practice. that we have a way of, and we do it, you know, sometimes through academic disciplines, sometimes through Chazal, through the Talmud, sometimes through Midrash, sometimes through modern feminist scholarship, but we have a way of really, la sopa divrei Torah, of really sitting with every single word when we study Tanakh, when we study texts. And that's special.
So you're naming a feature of, say, of Jewish subcultures. Obviously, there's not one culture here, but of certain Jewish subcultures that is very comfortable engaging, not engaging in a text in order to extract information, right? Not reading a text, not solely for the plot, but sitting with a text in a slow way and allowing a certain degree of play, of questioning, of exploration. And you're naming that a literacy practice, which actually then says, because there are many literacy practices that all have validity in particular contexts, but if this is one of the literacy practices, how does that then shape the broader discourse around literacy in general education?
Exactly. So that's really the heart of my work. So the piece that we're talking about today is just a tiny piece of that. But in the context of my work and in the context of what I'll call Jewish literacy practices around reading Tanakh, there is an assumption that you are able to decode the text. And so, yeah, my question is like, okay, so we have this literacy practice. It takes different shapes in different communities. And a child might actually talk about authorial intent in Tanakh a lot at home, and it might not get spoken about in the classroom, or vice versa, right? So there's some negotiation within a child's education, right? Like, what exactly are you asking me to do? And that's going to change depending on the context, whether it's their home or their synagogue or this teacher's classroom or that teacher's classroom, or they switch schools for some other reason, or camp, etc. So there's that internal negotiation, but then there's the, let's say that whole web is in conversation with all the other literacy practices that they engage in the world, whether it's in history class, English class, the soccer field, right? Basketball court. How does a child sort of navigate that, right? We live in a multimodal world. We live in a multi-literacy world. And I'm saying two things at once. I'm saying we have a special group of literacy practices. And it's only special if we help children figure out how they put it in conversation with all the other literacy practices that they engage in.
So you're committed to literacy, and this is the discipline that you come out of, the research base that you come out of. Other people might talk about interpretation or hermeneutics. Why do you feel comfortable with the term literacy rather than talking about interpretation of texts?
So some of this is sort of just sorting through academic language and choosing who you're in conversation with and deciding what terms you use. In other words, it's not that I don't address questions of hermeneutics. It's not that I'm not talking about interpretation. But the reason why I choose literacy practice is because it comes out of a place in my field of study that says, that first of all, starts from the premise like what we do with texts, and here I'm talking about texts broadly, whether it's a print text or a spoken text or a piece of art, has social purposes. We do it with people. We do it for social purposes. We are motivated by our own identities. And there's no hierarchy, right? So if you're really, really good at reading and understanding complicated novels, and you're really good at writing, what traditionally in the 50s we considered like literacy, and let's talk about literate cultures and literate people, they are not cognitively superior to communities, cultures, people, individuals who are really good at recitation or singing or creating art. So that's where I start. That is my theoretical framework. That is the world I come from. And that's why I choose to use the language, because I'm signaling to the people in my field, hey, I'm part of sociocultural literacy. I'm part of those people who understand or believe, maybe we're mistaken, that literacy practices are valuable within the context of a given community, a given society, a given culture. But there's not like some, hierarchy that is from Sinai, you know, or some cognitive hierarchy that some are better than others. And that's important to me to signal.
And one of the fascinating things to think about is really what work does reading, interpreting does the study of Tanakh do? What work does it do for a culture? What work does it do for an individual? And, you know, this is not about putting somebody on the couch. It's just about understanding that literacy does work in the world. It does work for people. Social rewards, social positioning, connections to other people, connections to meaning.
Yeah, and I want to say, like, just for the Jewish educators who work tirelessly on this stuff, right? Who I'm sitting here, like, pontificating with you, and they're, you know, doing classroom management with 15, 20, 25 kids in the room, some of which are saying, I don't care, right? And so I just want to say something, which is that some day school students really, and some day school families and communities really have an inherent attachment to this particular literacy practice, that being reading and knowing Tanakh and maybe being able to read it in the biblical Hebrew, and some don't. And yet the teachers in Jewish day schools teach all of these students. And so these questions are not just theoretical, but they actually have implications for dilemmas of practice and pedagogy that come up, right? Okay, so a kid says, I don't care. In fact, my friend once told me, I have a lot of brilliant friends. I'm lucky like that. And one of my brilliant friends, Amy Newman, said to me, she was talking about class discussion and someone said some brilliant insight into the text that pulled on background knowledge and a few things. And this kid turned and said, imagine knowing or caring what any of that meant. And it was such a like rich dilemma of practice, right? Okay, now my friend Amy has to explain this literacy practice that both of those kids are required to engage in at least for the 45 minutes a day that they're with her. And so when I talk about a literacy practice and when I name the fact that it has social purposes, I also want to name the fact that it might not have social purposes and that our teachers are dealing with students who might not feel that this gives them cultural capital.
Right. Right. And it's the ongoing work of individual teachers, classrooms, schools to be building those worlds and rebuilding those worlds together with students. So in this particular article that we're talking about, you offer 5 principles. I'm not going to go through all of them, but you offer 5 principles for the teaching of biblical Hebrew texts. And when the article comes out, it's not out yet, but it will be out shortly. Everyone will be able to see more about that. But I want to focus in on the last one, which you call making textual thinking visible, making textual thinking visible, and you're echoing other work in the field about visible thinking. And here's what you write. All of the work that teachers ask students to do in biblical Hebrew should be in the service of facilitating students' textual thinking and interpretation. All of the work should be in the service of facilitating students' textual thinking and interpretation. Explain what, this was a really rich sentence, a really powerful sentence. Tell us what you mean by this.
Absolutely. Okay. So essentially, again, and this comes from sociocultural theories of learning and of knowledge, and all of this sort of has come to me through certain mentors that I had in my graduate program and my graduate study. But the basic idea is this: what reading is across literacy practices, but certainly in literacy practices such as the study of Tanakh, where the gift we gave is close reading, what the actual literacy practice is, what reading is taking a sign and creating a new sign, is the opportunity to say, huh, I'm reading this and I believe that it means this. And I believe that it means this because of that.
Whether that's orally or in writing, articulating a meaning.
Exactly. And so we can't induct students into that practice without letting them engage in the practice. So let me say that because it's actually not a complicated idea at all. You don't learn without doing. And so all I'm saying is that when we're doing a literacy practice, that ultimately that the real communities of practice are going to ask our students, what do you think this text means? What's your interpretation? When you apply this particular hermeneutics, where do you arrive at, right? If we want them to be able to answer that question, we better let them practice answering that question in school.
So you want, in this principle, you're saying, you're asking educators to keep their eye on the prize. If the prize is enabling students to do the thing, to engage in literacy practice, you have to give them the opportunity to do that rather than assuming that there's a kind of passive accumulation of knowledge, which someday in the future may magically emerge as a literacy practice.
Exactly. And it's not like a huge shift. So for example, like, okay, you want to teach Rashi, you want to teach Ramban, right? So it's just saying, like, instead of saying, wow, look at their brilliant insight into the text, saying, huh, what was the question they had? And what was the work they did to arrive at the answer they arrived at? Same thing with your Devar Torah, right? It's about you're at Shabbat Shira, or it's, you know, right before the kids go home on Friday and you're giving over a little Torah, don't just give it over, but actually like say, what was the question and what was the interpretive work I did to offer the answer that I'm offering? Of course, we ask kids to do this right now. That's best practices in math. That's best practice in science. So it's not really a break from anything else happening across the school day. It's just naming, let's do that more and let's bring awareness to our intention setting in doing that, in saying, I'm not just going to tell you what I think this text means, but I'm going to tell you why I think it means that and the work I did to get there.
Wonderful. So as always, the time has flown by. We're almost out of time. I want to ask you just a final question. We called the session, Why Jewish Day Schools Should Teach Students to Read Torah. So yeah, why does it matter?
Why does it matter? Again, I'm going to go back to something that I talked about earlier. From an academic perspective, it doesn't matter on some objective level in the sense of like, hey, this is the skill that's going to get your kids a high-paying job, get them into an Ivy League school. It might, but that's not why I'm going to say it matters. It matters because it's a literacy practice that we as a community have chosen to invest in, and we say that it's valuable. And, you know, one time you told me that my research is vintage. Retro? I can't remember what word you used. Tanakh? I feel like timeless would have been the better description. Do I happen to think it's a phenomenal literacy practice that has a lot of transfer? Yes, but that's not the point. The point is that we as a community care about it, right? And the way that we want to teach is we want to share what we care about, not tell them, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that, you need to know this and you haven't yet learned that, but just say, hey, come participate in this activity that we care about because we think it's awesome. And you know what? Your parents thought it was awesome and your grandparents thought it was awesome. And that's why we give half a day to it. That's why I want to do this work.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So if I'm hearing you correctly, why Jewish Day Schools should teach students to read Torah has to do with what it means to induct students into a community, into the practices of a community through which they then connect to people and connect to ideas and connect to values and situate themselves in the world in deeper and more meaningful ways. Ziva, thank you. We're out of time. It's always great to talk with you about your work. I'm so delighted that we get to do it on a regular basis, but now we've gotten to do it in a somewhat public fashion as well. I want to thank everyone for joining us. I encourage you to check out the Mandel Center events page to learn about other upcoming events and videos of prior events. Our next session in this series, I will be speaking with Dr. Anna Hartman about children's theories about Judaism. So please join us then. Thank you again, Ziva. Thank you all for joining us. Be well.